Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to an all-new edition of The Payoff. I'm Tom. That's Jeff. We appreciate you listening. As always, we are pumped to cover this match. But first, Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Not too bad, you know, dug out of the snow now, you know, had to, you know, hopefully starting to warm up a little bit here soon. It's we've got a lot of wrestling over the next couple of weeks, not just you and me talking about it, but between Revolution, Fastlane, we're on the early parts of the road, you know, to Mania, but we are definitely on the road. So things happening, which is exciting.
It's kind of an annoying road to WrestleMania because it's like Elimination Chamber, then it's Fastlane. There's just so much stuff. It's almost like too much stuff going on. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't have time to watch like the current product, like nonstop every single week, like everything. But it's like, it's like this road to WrestleMania. It's just, it's so long and winding and back and forth. You know, call me old fashioned, but it's like, I like when a guy wins the Royal Rumble. I like when he says, I'm going to kick your teeth in at WrestleMania. And then, you know, on Raw, it's two legends deciding they're going to wrestle at WrestleMania. And then it's, you know, another match. And it's, I don't know, there's just too much going on.
Even my partner made the comment because I was like, oh, two Sundays ago, we had Elimination Chamber and then we've got Revolution. And she's like, she goes, how do you know when they're all on? I was like, I don't. Like, that's the thing is like, they may not announce it for like a month or two out right now. And so she's like, well, what about the one in April? I was like, well, that's two nights. She's like, are they always two nights? I was like, no, they're never two nights. And she's like, well, why is that one two nights? And so like trying to explain to her, like, you know, kind of how it works. I was like, I wish it was like every third Sunday, you're going to get a pay-per-view. Like I wish it, that was the schedule, but like trying to plan Sunday dinner is absolutely terrible when it comes to, you know, working around this time of year and working around wrestling, not fun.
Yeah. The only thing that saves me is most days I check Wrestling Inc. And I know you have a couple sites that you check too, but it's like, I'll be like, oh shit, tonight's, you know, Elimination Chamber. I completely forgot or whatever it might be. Yep. So that helps me. But I feel like, because right now, to your point, what I used to do is they would, you know, when there was like live events and stuff, they would say, here's the 2021 pay-per-view schedule. Yep. So I'd always mark down when the pay-per-views were on my calendar so that I knew. But then also if it was like, oh shit, you know, Hell in a Cell's in Phoenix, I'm going to mark that down because I'm going to go. Or, you know, hey, this one might be in driving distance. Maybe I could get up to Vegas for that show. So that's why I was always excited about them. But now it's like, hell, I don't even think they gave a WrestleMania date for the longest time. And so you just don't know when they are. Sometimes I can't even tell you when they are. You don't know what's happening after WrestleMania, what the dates are. So it's really annoying right now. The other thing too is like, I find that if I don't watch the shows live, it's kind of a pain in the ass. Like, I started Royal Rumble late and I ended up just fast forwarding through a ton of stuff because it's like I want to text with people and follow on Twitter. So I don't like watch them delayed. So I really try to watch them on time because, you know, if you watch them a couple of days later, you find out what happened and it's like, then I'm like, I don't want to sit here for 4 hours and watch this entire thing.
So. Well, and things are going to get screwy because in 2 weeks too, and this is a reminder for our fans, we got to switch over to Peacock too. And so like, hopefully that's an easy launch rollout because it switches on Thursday and then Fastlane is Sunday. So if there's any issues or anything, like they could really be hurt with like stuff like that, but you know, time will tell, but hey, you know what? There's wrestling to watch. And, you know, I know you and I don't spend a whole lot of time in front of the TV anyways. So it's at least, you know, we've got, you know, we can always rely on, there's going to be wrestling on at some point. So it's just nice.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see. And if it's out there, I haven't read it yet, but it's like, the things that I've watched or the things that I have on my watch list, are they going to transfer over? My guess is there's no way. That just sounds really complex.
Yeah.
I'll put it this way. I will be surprised if the Peacock layout, user experience, ways to navigate are better than the WWE Network. Because I sometimes complain about the network, but overall, I kind of love it the way it is right now. So
yep.
My feelings are there's going to be a lot of people pissed off, confused, annoyed with whatever the migration is. And oh, by the way, what happens if they don't migrate everything right away? What if they're like, oh, well, this stuff's going to happen in phases, or, oh, we don't have the shotgun Saturday nights available yet. I think there's going to be a lot of bullshit that's going to happen. And you know how sensitive the wrestling community is. So
yeah, they're going to hear it.
Yeah, if you do the $5 version, they're going to bitch there's too many commercials and they're not going to be able to find stuff and not everything's going to move right away. I just think this is, if I was them, I would do this business deal all day. I'm just saying, I think it's going to be, fans are going to be annoyed. But again, they're all going to pay the $5 or $10. And if they don't, it really doesn't matter because they're getting paid whatever it is, $100 million a year for 5 years or whatever.
We can talk about this more if it gets closer, but are we going to get commercials during a pay-per-view? Is it going to be noticeable if you and I don't pay for the ads? And then like all of a sudden there's a super long rest hold or Michael Cole's talking about Snickers and we know what's going on because,
there's two things to that. So number one is, are they going to do commercials during the show? My guess is not. My guess is it'll be like other streaming services where, hey, I want to watch the 91 Royal Rumble. I hit play and then there's a 30-second commercial. Then there's more. I would imagine live programming. That would be my guess. Now, the other thing, and I don't know if you read this or picked up on it, but there's something, and don't quote me on this, but basically I believe that NBC has the ability to find new sponsorships to move into things. So they may be selling new sponsorships that they're putting places on the network if you don't have that, the non-commercial one. So they're going to be trying to generate more revenue off of the people that are watching the WWE stuff.
Well, and it's definitely going to be interesting, but with the switch, I mean, I'm ready to make the switch. That's fine. But I think you make a good point too. And like, we're already being those wrestling fans right now. Like if we, like you said, it's like Saturday night main event. Are we going to get Saturday Night Live in with our searches? Like what's, how's it going to like, yeah. Is it going to be a standalone kind of, browser when it gets there or like,
no, it's going to be, it's just going to be like you clicking on The Office and watching all of that. And the commercial before The Office is going to promote something else that's on demand or something that's currently on NBC. So last thing I'll say, just because I'm thinking about this and then we can get into the real reason we're here. We normally don't do these diatribes. We normally say you guys want to hear about the match. So I'll apologize.
We're not alone. I'm sure we're not alone.
It's our podcast and we find this interesting, which means you probably find it interesting. And if you don't, then you let us know. But I think there's some interesting stuff we're talking about. The last thing I'll say is, it's funny as you're talking, what I was thinking about is find me one other medium where the actual product. Okay. So the actual product is WWE, AEW, whoever it might be, right? The actual product is like you watch the television show, consume it. Maybe you attend a live event. Maybe you follow some people on social media. That's the actual product. I can't think of one medium where people dissect and obsess over the behind the scenes business aspect of it as much. Yep. My example is this NFL. If I said to you, tell me about the NFL business, you'd say, oh, well, they have TV deals and every 5 years they come up and there's Sunday ticket and there's 32 owners in the NFL and the salary cap's like 180 million and the guys sign contracts. There's nothing really that interesting about it. And there's only so much coverage, right? I mean, it's not like we're saying, oh, well, who has the concession stand contract, at Lucas Oil in Indianapolis. Like people don't really give a shit about the business side of football. They just watch the product. that's what's so interesting and strange about pro wrestling is the behind the scenes business stuff, really, for the past 30 years, 25 years now with the dirt sheets and everything else, is just as interesting. And I've said that to friends of mine where, you know, I'm like, guys, I watch the on-screen stuff. I mean, I consume a lot of it, obviously. I still watch it. Okay, haha, make fun of me because I still watch wrestling. I don't give a shit. But what I've always been drawn to as much or more is the behind the scenes, the guys jumping ship when their contracts are up, the TV deals, you listen to the, you know, like Eric Bischoff's podcast. I don't care about WCW Sin 2001. I want to hear about how Bischoff and his investors almost bought the company and why they didn't and why the deal fell through and Turner, AOL. That stuff's more interesting than the on-screen. Are there other parallels like that, or is wrestling unique? Because I can't think of them.
Not that I can think of, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's just crazy how, like, it's the world we live in, though. And like you said, wrestling fans, we're a crazy bunch. And so, yeah, that's just how it goes. But yeah, it's definitely unique, interesting.
It's such a unique minimum. Medium, sorry. All right. So we're taking a detour on the road to WrestleMania, but this kind of ties into WrestleMania a little bit and something we just talked about. But I wanted to cover this. I don't even know how it came up, but basically, you know, we were talking about tag team wrestling. We were talking about how great the Rockers are. I think I was like, oh, I want to see the best Rocker match of all time. You did some digging and you came up with this match. So why did you come up with this one?
Well, this was one too. And yeah, we had to go deep into the fucking library for this one. This was one where you and I were talking about the Rockers a few weeks ago. Everyone, you know, there's no secret of, you know, your love of Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels, but we've never talked about the tag team yet. And so I think we had said a couple of weeks ago, like, let's find ourselves a good Rockers match. And so we were kind of, you know, digging through everything. And this is why we like hearing from fans too on Twitter. Like, let us know, like, kind of matches and things you want to hear that we haven't talked about. And this was one where it was just totally different, and it kind of, the timing worked out perfect because, you know, we're a month from when it actually happened, 1991, but it's at that point, you know, we're at 30 years ago, like, which sounds crazy to say, but here we are. So I do
this all the time to you, and I should know the answer, but I never do. I always ask you, is this the first time we covered something, right? Is this the first like tag match we've done?
You know what? True tag, it could be. Yeah.
Like a straight up two tag
team. Four men, and a tag team. Yep.
I'm gonna quickly scroll our list of matches we've covered.
No, we've done some degeneration. Okay, we did some New Age Outlaws and stuff.
We covered the formation of the New Age Outlaws, which was Rockabilly versus Flash Funk. Okay. That was not a tag match.
Yep.
I'm still scrolling. I do not see a tag match yet. And we're going. Okay, we covered The Rock's debut, which was a Survivor Series match, but that wasn't a traditional tag match.
There was a Thunder Cage
match.
The ladder match, but that was multiple tag teams. Okay,
first tag match we ever covered, New Age Outlaws versus Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack.
Okay, there you go. So
there you go. Okay, and I don't see another one. But I will tell you, we did a tag team ladder match, Edge and Chris, WrestleMania 2000. So we've done a couple tag matches. But here's what's unique about this match. This is the first tag match that we are covering during the golden era of tag teams.
Yes.
Okay. So there you go.
Sweet spot. Yeah. Well, and this show is one where, like, before we started looking at it, you and I had no idea about the show. So we're going to give quite the history lesson here once we start talking about the build and things like that. But this is one where, yeah, it was just kind of you and I, again, this is how it happens. You and I shooting the shit about wrestling and we're like, what's out there? Like, what can we find about this? And sure. And this is a deep cut. I mean, like, you know, the fans should be excited to listen to this one and kind of dig into this one because it's fun.
Well, deep cut, and it good things come when you and I bullshit. And this reminds me a little of that Savage HBK match we found, another deep cut. So
yeah.
Let's jump right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. You got to follow along with me here. And I'm going to butcher some names. I'm going to probably say things that didn't actually happen, but I'm going to do my best. Okay. Some of this was a deep dive of us. Some of this was grabbing some information from the dirt sheets here, but try and follow along. Okay. March 30th, 1991. We're right after WrestleMania 7. And this is a event, WrestleFest, that was done in combination of the World Wrestling Federation and Super World of Sports. There's an announced gate of 64,000, but real attendance may have been between 42 and 45,000. Believe it or not, sometimes in professional wrestling, there is some fudging of the numbers.
What?
Yes. I know. I'm sorry. Not long before this, 9 days to be exact, there is another show in Japan at the Tokyo Dome that was a WCW New Japan Super Show 1, okay, also known as Starcade in Tokyo Dome. Okay, so there's this other event 9 days prior from WCW. So if you think the Monday Night Wars was the beginning of some WCW, WWF back and forth, it goes back way before that. We had pay-per-view wars. We had guys jumping. I mean, this has been going on for a while, right? So let me, I'll just quickly go through this show. You had Ric Flair in the main event. He's your NWA champion. He would actually lose. Great Muta and Sting wrestled. That's a pretty awesome match. Steiner Brothers were against an IWGP tag team. Justin Thunder Liger was on there. Jushin Thunder Liger. There's just a lot of stuff happening on that show. So that happens.
Horseman. Yeah. Big names. Horseman. Yeah.
Yeah. Big names. So 9 days later, okay, you get this match. Now, keep in mind, this is just 7 days after WrestleMania 7. Okay. So we're coming right off of that. That's your Hogan Slaughter, Warrior Savage. We've talked about some of that stuff. What a great show that was. So what I want to share with you is the DVD of this card. So they bounced around a little bit. The first match on the DVD is actually the match we're going to cover, Hart Foundation and the Rockers. Other stuff that happened on this card, I'm not even going to try to pronounce some of these names. You can look up the card if you want to, but Earthquake was against an SWS guy. The Million Dollar Man and King Haku tagged up against two guys from the SWS. Then you had a WWF grudge match, which was the Ultimate Warrior and Sergeant Slaughter, which is your rematch from the Rumble 91, when, of course, Slaughter would beat the Warrior. We also had an 8-man tag of guys that were all part of SWS. We had Hacksaw Jim Duggan against an SWS guy. Demolition in a tag match against two SWS guys. An SWS versus UWF match with quote-unquote shooting rules.
Crazy. Yep.
Yeah, right? A WWF grudge match of the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, who's your Intercontinental Champion, against Kurt Hennig. A tag team of the Barbarian and Jimmy Snuka against two SWS guys. Randy Savage against an SWS guy. That's kind of your semi-main event. Now, keep in mind, Randy Savage was quote-unquote retired due to his quote-unquote career-ending match, but this was a quote-unquote contractual obligation that Randy Savage had to fill. I think they did some of that in the US as well, where that was what they said. They were like, he was contractually obligated to be on this house show. Then the main event, okay, and this is kind of cool. Hulk Hogan teams up with an SWS wrestler against the Legion of Doom. So that was pretty cool.
You got to remember, the Legion of Doom were huge in Japan too.
Massive. The Road Warriors, right?
Yes. The Road Warriors. Yes.
Massive. So a lot going on. Really, really cool. I know this is completely unrelated, but did you see that one of the new what's the documentary called?
Icons or Legends?
The one that's on on cable.
Oh, Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring. They're covering that collision in Korea back in 1991. So it's just crazy to think there was like all this other stuff happening overseas that we don't even really know about. Again, obviously different place, but anyways, I thought that was interesting. So
yes.
what a cool show. I'm pumped to cover this match because in Jeff's research, he came across, they said this was an awesome match. So what else do you have in terms of build? Because there's just so much interesting stuff here.
Yeah, this one's just a little crazy. It's just kind of all over the board and kind of what's happening. So like Tom already said, this event, it was 7 days after WrestleMania 7, where you had Hulk Hogan beating Sergeant Slaughter. And this was like, it was 9 days after there was, like Tom said, a New Japan WCW show, Starrcade 91, you know, it's just a super show there. And Tom kind of went over the card a little bit on that one. Side note on that one, it was interesting because my research on this one, Dave Meltzer was actually at this event. He said that the credited for having great presentation for the main event championship match and praising a lot of the matches with the Steiner brothers, the six-man tag, Jushin Liger. Overall, he said that he argued the show would have been more effective for WCW if it was aired in the United States on television rather than as a pay-per-view. And so he just kind of had, you know, some gripes about how it was aired, but he was there live for this one. And so he enjoyed it. And you had that. So,
What a crazy, like, it's just so crazy that like this would have been a huge special on the network in this era.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You could have done. Yeah. They think about it, like how we get Saudi Arabia now, like they were doing 30 years ago, this was happening. So, yeah. So what you had at the time, you had one of the top stars of all Japan pro wrestling who was actually in the main event. Like Tom said, we're going to butcher names here, but Genichiro Tenryu, all Japan pro wrestling. He actually was a spokesperson for, oddly enough, one of the best known eyeglass makers in Japan. So Megane Super. And so weird, but he used like his connections with that company to start a new pro wrestling company in like mid 1990, which was SWS. And you get,
I've never heard of it.
I hadn't either. And so, but you get this Super World of Sports promotion. And so from there, it was interesting because it almost kind of funny. And I said, you know, the Eric Bischoff era of Nitro and Ted Turner, the company at the time was looked at as a money mark, that they were just throwing money at anything and anything. And as it said, like, you and I have heard of that thing happening before, but the actual terminology, it makes sense of that. Someone who founds, there's a definition of someone who founds or invests in a wrestling promotion mainly to associate with wrestlers, often willfully or ignorantly disregarding financial risks as profit focused investors would avoid. So that's happened for sure. But that was kind of compounded because Super World of Sports signing a contract with World Wrestling Federation. And so it was all about, you know, all about the bottom line at this point. And so there was multiple shows, but, you know, only a couple because the promotion wasn't around that long, which we'll talk about in the aftermath on this one. But this being one of the first,
like their version of the UWF.
Pretty much, yeah. And so this one of the first shows taking place March 30th, 1991. There was also a show in December. And then they kind of paired up with some of the smaller promotions around Japan as well, too. It's like a Lucha Federation as well, and then like a shoot style as well. And so they had, you know, it pretty much, you know, why this card, like Tom was talking about shoot style and all these other things, it's because these promotions that they had, you know, they had this ability to go out and do other things. And so that's how we got, you know, Super World of Sports. So what about the competitors in this one? Like the Hart Foundation, we've talked about it a lot in this one, or, you know, on this show, but, you know, this is your first episode listening. Just a quick recap. You had the Heart, the original Heart Foundation, which has been many variations over the years. This is 1985. You had Jim the Anvil Neidhart being managed by Jimmy Hart, and then also who is his true brother-in-law, Bret the Hitman Hart. You had these guys just all kinds of matches through really like the latter half of the 1980s. And then you had at WrestleMania 5, them beating the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine to win that match. So SummerSlam 89, they took on the tag team champions at the time, the Brainbusters, who were Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. It was a non-title match. But, you know, kind of had a little back and forth. And so the Heart, you know, they ended up losing that match, but just a lot of things happening. So you actually had them in late 1989, splitting up for a little bit. You had Hart, which actually very early having some matches against Mr. Perfect, while Jim the Anvil Neidhart feuding with the, you know, still respectable, but not quite as popular Warlord. And them kind of getting into that as well too. But very quickly, these guys in late 1989, heading into 1990, starting to feud with the Rockers. Now, both teams really working. I don't want to say faces, but they were the fan favorites. And so you kind of had that. And this was, when I say the Rockers, this was Shawn Michaels, this was Marty Jannetty. And so now, while it was unusual to have the kind of fan favorites face each other, especially as Tom said, this like golden age of like the late 80s, early 90s, like it was always very clearly defined bad guy, good guy normally. Like this was one that it just kind of worked with these guys. And so they had a lot of matches and really kind of leading toward, you know, you could see the start of like Hart Michaels in this, even when they were tag teams, but you know, going to time limits, kind of having all these different things. Now the, you know, you had the kind of Rockers and like, there was some nonsense when it comes to like tag title switching and things like that. There was an unrecognized kind of win that happened actually in you know, my home state of Indiana right now up in Fort Wayne. It was a two out of three count match. Just the turnbuckle broke. It was just really weird, but
I hadn't heard about that for years, you know, or like when I didn't know about it at the time, but I heard about it years later and I'm like, wait. So then I like, you know, I go on the internet and I find like pictures of them holding the titles. I'm like, oh my God. Like, they
right. I know.
It just, but they did just, they're like the greatest tag team to ever, never win the tag team titles.
Just crazy. Yeah. How it all played out. But anyways, you had the Hart Foundation though. You know, I say getting their titles back, or however you want to phrase it, not ever really losing their title, but getting their title back. And so they actually held the belt. So now we're getting a little bit closer to this. So until WrestleMania 7. And so, you know, 1991, they beat the Nasty Boys, but then kind of went their own separate ways. And so it was very quickly after WrestleMania 7 where these guys broke up, went their own different ways, just kind of, you know, did their own thing. So that's where you get kind of the Hart Foundation and what's going on there. So, and that happening again. Like, so you've got wrestlers on this card, like, you know, the quote unquote retired Randy Savage. And you also have the broken up, which we didn't know at the time, broken up Hart Foundation wrestling in this match at Super World of Sports.
Well, think about this. So WrestleMania 7, both teams were together. WrestleMania 8, Shawn Michaels is in his match against Tito Santana. And then Bret Hart is in the Intercontinental title match with
Roddy Piper.
Okay.
Yep.
So there you go. So it's just funny how they were both tag teams and then they're both, you know, singles guys a year later.
And they're all, yeah, and out there doing their thing. Just interesting how that plays out for sure. Yeah.
But so it was at the exact same time.
Yep. Absolutely. So. So that's our, like, that's where we're at with the Hart Foundation. So we have not talked about the Rockers. And so what is the history of the Rockers? And even I didn't even know this either before I started kind of doing my research here. So Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels, they actually first met. It was NWA's Central States Wrestling, which was based in Kansas City in 1985. So Central States Wrestling, for those of you, this, we're talking the Central States. We got Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and Iowa. And so that was their territory of where they were and kind of where they met. So you have these guys, though, winning the NWA Central States Tag Team Championship. Make sure that's on your resume. That's a big one. Winning that tag championship in 1985. They actually lost it a week later, though. But hey, you know what? You won it and put it on, you know, no big deal. So After they lost that tag team belt, though, Michaels left Kansas City and the NWA, and he went to work for Texas All-Star Wrestling, of course, his home state, Texas. And so that was kind of mid-1985. In 1986, you have both these guys, though, they're signed to the American Wrestling Association, AWA, and that they were wrestling there because a lot of the AWA wrestlers had left to go to, at the time, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, or World Wrestling Federation, excuse me, the WWF. And so you've got these two paired up. There's actually in the AWA, and this is where they started their original, you know, one of their original names that was, it was actually the Country Rockers. And then also the suggested name was the US Express. And so neither of them, like, I can't imagine if that was, I mean, the Country Rockers makes sense as, you know, well, I say for the territory, it would make sense. Like if you're wrestling in, can't, you know, the central states or like Texas All-State, like Country Rockers, fine, whatever. But you know, who exactly came up with the name, who knows, but they ended up coming up actually with the Midnight Rockers. It was actually inspired by a Judas Priest song. And as I could see the lyric that they kind of pull from it, it's living after midnight, rocking to the dawn, love until morning, then I'm gone, I'm gone. And so they're living after midnight single there. So makes sense. So they were, you know, the Midnight Rockers for a little bit. And kind of going through that. Now, their first WWF tag appearance, it was 1987. It was actually only a few days after they had lost the AWA championship or the AWA tag team championship. And then they were at the time, and I thought this was crazy, their first opponent in this 1987 house show was the Hart Foundation. And so you've got 1987 and these guys eventually wrestling in 1991, but a house show and the Hart Foundation with the tag championship kind of having this, you know, match against Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. Just kind of crazy to think about how early their paths actually crossed when they were wrestling. So, so that was the house show, but then 4 days later, it was their first, it was WWF Wrestling Challenge, as we've talked about on this show before. They beat the tag team. It was Jose Estrada Sr. and Jimmy Jack Funk. And so this was, again, a rough life here, kind of, you know, what they're going through. That was their only appearance for the WWF, and then they got fired. So, you know, they were there and kind of do it. So then finally, almost like a year later, living the gimmick, June 1988, WWF Superstars of Wrestling, actually, again, having their televised debut, and then their pay-per-view is actually the 1988 Survivor Series. They were part of a 10 tag team Survivor Series match. And so in this was, you had the Powers of Pain, which is the Barbarian and the Warlord. You had the Rockers, the British Bulldogs, which was Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid, the Hart Foundation, the Young Stallions, Demolition, the Brainbusters, the Bolsheviks, the Fabulous Rougeaus, and the Conquistadors. And so when was the last, we'd have to look it up. I wish I had done it before the show. When was the last time we had a tag team Survivor Series match? Not that I want one again, because
I think they only did it once and it was a train wreck.
Like, why would you at this point? So, but they actually eliminated the Bolsheviks from the match before they were a double disqualification elimination from the Brainbusters. So, but that Survivor Series, 1988. So, you've got really 1989 until 1990. They were feuding with the Powers of Pain, who was the Barbarian and the Warlord. You had both of these guys in the Royal Rumble in 1990, but neither won victorious. They were Michaels was eliminated by the Ultimate Warrior. You had Marty Jannetty being eliminated by Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. So, now we're starting to get a little bit closer to this one at this point. So April 1990, they started feuding with Pat Tanaka and Akio Saito. the Orient Express, pretty much what it boils down to. And so they had really a feud that started at WrestleMania 6 and carried on throughout that entire time. And so they ended up having a match too at this Royal Rumble 1991, you know, close to almost a year later, which this one, I was curious. So I looked it up. The Rockers and Orient Express at the Royal Rumble 1991, a 4-star bout. And so, which who would have thunk? And so, but we get to this point where we had, you know, the little bit, you know, the Hart Foundation, there wasn't a whole lot of, I say, these tag teams kind of going at each other leading up to this point, because after this, like they had, you know, their Royal Rumble match, you know, we're just a month and a half out from this WrestleFest show. You had, you know, the WrestleMania show where, you know, the Hart Foundation kind of breaking up after that, kind of dealing with that. And so, and we get to this show as it being the first kind of cross promotion card match, whatever, you know, or, you know, matchup that you want to look at it with the World Wrestling Federation and the Super World of Sports. And so, just good stuff, crazy. You know, it's a long story to tell. And I left some things out, but you know, that's okay, because we gave you the bullet points. We gave you a lot of stuff here, and that's how we got here.
Love it. I'm pumped to cover this one, man.
Yeah, I know. And so I have not, other than finding the video, which I know you're going to explain how to find it, I have not watched this.
Thanks for reminding me. I forgot about that part, because we're not watching it on the network.
Yeah, so we got to make sure to cover that.
Yeah, and we'll post on social media as well. But it's a Daily Motion video. If you search, I think if you search WrestleFest Rockers Hart Foundation, it's the first thing that pops up. But it's on Daily Motion. The video title is The Rockers versus the Hart Foundation, Tokyo Dome 3/30/91. So go to the website or do a Google search. It's obviously from WrestleFest at the Tokyo Dome. But yeah, we're just gonna hit play on this video and watch it and talk about it, and we'll probably crank up the sound a little bit and dude, I'm pumped for this one.
Yeah, let's jump into it.
And if it sucks, you blame Jeff.
You can blame me. That's fine. I'll take it.
But pay off Jeff on Twitter.
Yep. I'm used to it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm pumped, dude. I'm really excited for this one. Yep. Yeah. Find it on Daily Motion. It's going to be a good one. Let's get right into the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
Rockers coming out. We have the commentary. God, look at those outfits, dude. Those are like, oh, God, I love the old Rockers outfits, man. Looking good. Coming to the ring. Oh, my favorite tag team. I'd pay good money to have one of those jean jackets, Jeff. I'll tell you that right now.
These guys, this is one where it's, and now you got the Harts coming out.
I'm assuming the normal music, right?
I don't believe so. Actually, you do have the Japanese commentary on this one.
I'm saying the Hart Foundation music. Just
And so
what you think of is the Bret Hart music is what they have.
Yep. And so kind of coming out to the fans here now, and something I know I watch a whole lot more of, like New Japan wrestling and just kind of, you know, this, that you don't expect necessarily some of the pops that you'd get from, you know, American wrestling, if you will. Like I say, you know, the crowd reacts absolutely, but it's just a little different how they react. So
let me ask you this, because I know that was, you know, and you watch probably more of this than I do, but like, I know that was always the thing, is like, they don't like go crazy. They just, you know, are much more subdued. Has that changed at all in recent years, or is it still the same?
Especially like the Wrestle Kingdom shows recently that I've seen, of course the reaction, we're not saying they're not reacting, there's not reaction, there absolutely is, but there is a lot of just like oohs and ahs and like, you know, things like that. And there is not the kind of route, like the Monday after Raw rowdy crowd is not a thing. And so, you know, you just don't get that. So right out of the gate here, we got bell has rung. You got Brett starting with Marty, and that is Earl Hebner working the match as well too.
Oh, it is Earl Hebner. You got that,
yep,
right.
A going as well. So, and these guys right out of the gate. Yep.
I love the rocker. Those are some of my favorite ones that they wear. It's like kind of the blue.
You get the tassels.
I can't even begin to explain them, but I like those ones. I've seen them before.
Well, and I remember
I think those are the ones they were wearing when they wrestled the Hart Foundation and won the tag team titles.
And so I remember this is one of the things that stuck in my head. Here. Yeah, go ahead.
You're right. I'm going to say something really stupid. It just dawned on me that we're going to get to see Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart wrestling. You know, one-on-one. I mean, at some point they'll be in the ring together. But yeah, dude, you got Marty and Bret. I mean, God, Marty was just so good. He was every bit the wrestler that Shawn Michaels was. Certainly not the personality or the character, even at this point. I mean, Shawn had the charisma and the it factor, but I mean, in terms of in-ring work, man, Marty Jannetty was every bit as good as Shawn Michaels. So Shawn getting tagged in, I mean, with the tag team specialist here, just the double moves.
The kip up. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Anvil just took Marty Jannetty's head off, flipped him over. So good, man. God, this is really, really good. God, I got a lot to talk about. So traditional tag teams. Who's your favorite traditional tag team ever?
Oh boy, that's tough because
I'll answer first. I'm an easy one. I'm the Rockers. I think so. I mean, and there's others that I like a lot too. But man, just I don't know. They were just so far ahead of their time, and they were just so fun. What about you though? What are some of the things you like?
It's hard going back all this way. I would probably say one of the earliest tag teams I remember is the Rockers. I take that back. It was either the Rockers or probably the Legion of Doom.
I missed a lot of that NWA Road Warrior stuff.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I heard they were just such badasses. I just didn't grow up watching that stuff.
But, and I miss the, you know, I was the, you know, the kid growing up, I always wanted the LOD pads. Like I wanted that, you know, to kind of have that experience. I think, you know, especially at this time, like we'll just say like this 90s kind of wrestling, like, you know, the Bushwhackers, like it's hard for me to not as crazy and as nutty as they were, like, you know, big fan of the Bushwhackers as well too. And kind of, and then you start getting it a little bit more like the Dudley Boys, like, you know, having them like Edge and Christian, having them back as well too. Like if I had to pick like the one that's like, just like you, the one that sticks in my head the most is this from this early wrestling is the Rockers. That was just them and Legion of Doom. That's how it is. Then you start getting to see, you know, Brothers of Destruction and shit like that for later times. But at this point, yeah, like these guys, this is where it was. Legion of Doom, I had one of the best finishers ever, I thought, with the putting them up on the shoulders and the clothesline off the top rope.
Doomsday device.
Yeah, the Doomsday device. Yep.
Dude, the audio or the video quality and just the angles on this are really good. I mean, this is like really, really good quality.
Well, and this is one, it's so much different watching and like just even a product at this point, because you don't get the quick cut, the Kevin Dunn quick cut. It's just not necessarily a thing at this point. Super kick party. There we go.
Double super kick. So, yep. So Shawn and Marty hit a double super kick. Anvil kicked out at two. Jeff kicked out at two.
It keeps going. Yep.
Do you think earlier on in his career, Shawn Michaels didn't have just the brute force to finish people off with the super kick? I mean, I'm guessing over time, he, at this point in his career, he was using it, but it never finished anyone off.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think he just wasn't hitting them square in the face, or do you think he worked on strengthening his kick over time?
There's just no band, you know, he's still, I say in essence, a solo performer at this point, you know, even as a tag team, like, you know, there's no tuning up the band, like, cause the band just wasn't the thing yet. So eventually he got there.
Really, yeah. Good match.
Yeah, very hot, like fast, like, you know, we're not that far, you know, it's a shorter match. It's only about 15 minutes. We're about 5 minutes in, and there's a lot of tags, a lot of action. We're in and out of the ring
on both sides. The other thing they're doing so well is it's like the tag team psychology, you know. I mean, look, there you go.
Well, like that alone right there. Yeah. So that was Brett who is in the corner, like using his knee, like kind of jumping as Michaels was running the ropes to stop Michaels. Like, it's just one of those things, like, you don't I'm sitting here watching this right now. You don't really see a lot of this tag wrestling anymore. Granted, we don't see a whole lot of tag wrestling anymore, but yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny. I mean, like Bret Hart, like he didn't actually legally tag in, and Earl asked him about it, but he had his back. So, you know, again, they're just kind of playing the heels a little bit here.
Oh, right. Yep.
Good stuff.
Hey, Michael Sullen. Yeah.
Would you, don't ask me. Oh, you, cause you said you're talking about the different versions of the Hart Foundation. What'd you think of the Hart Dynasty thing that they tried?
You know, it'll always be like Brett and like Jim for me. Like that will be always be the Hart Foundation. I remember like it just kind of how it you know, not only like those two, but then also you start getting into the, you know, the Bulldog and things like that and that kind of era. Like it just, you're just trying to, you know, catch that lightning in a bottle again.
So who, the Hart Dynasty, that was it Tyson Kidd, Davey Boy's son, and Natalya?
I forget exactly who it was, but I think yeah,
that's who it was. Gosh, I have to look.
I know Tyson Kidd, but yeah,
I was hoping you'd know. Yeah, I can't remember. I think that was part of it too. Is it just like Tyson Kidd? I get it, but like I don't understand how he's affiliated with the family. Like it was just easier when it was like, oh yeah, I get it. Like Davey Boy's the brother-in-law, and you know Owen and Brett are brothers. Just kind of made a little bit more sense.
And that you do have it right. That's who it was. But then you also had the new Hart Found or New Era Hart Foundation as well too, which was Davey Boy Smith Jr., Teddy Hart, and Brian Pillman Jr.
So as of the time of recording this, Davey Boy Jr. has not officially signed, but it looks like he's going to sign. Just 20 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago, read that they were talking about NXT UK for him. I'd love to see him back in the fold, man. I mean, apparently he's really gotten better, and I mean, I haven't seen any of his work, so I'd love to see Davey Boy's son back in it and maybe get on the main roster at some point.
I think you and I just recently saw that. We probably read the same article and kind of what was going on and what was happening. Yeah. It's the time of year because, well, it should have been last year, but you've got, you know, the Bulldog going into the Hall this year as well too. And so, and kind of being a Hall of Famer. So, yeah, who knows? It'd be interesting. It wouldn't surprise me type thing. You know, it's got to find a good story. I think, you know, as much as, you know, even we hear about the behind the backstage stuff, like, you know, WWE may not be the place for everybody right now. Like, and so you could be a whole lot more successful at other places.
Well, still you have to be more paycheck. Specific. Yeah. Are you talking Raw? Are you talking SmackDown? Are you talking NXT? Are you talking NXT UK? Are you talking NXT India? Are you talking... you know, I guess they have whatever relationship with Evolve. I mean, just, you know, it's like, where are we talking here?
So you got Michaels too. You got both the Hearts working over Michaels and kind of spit kind of taking. Yeah, it's a good name. Yeah. And that's the thing. And even Finn Balor recently kind of saying like he was supposed to be in NXT for what, 3-4 months. And now he's the champ and, you know, he's like, I'm right where I want to be. And if I was him, yeah, I'd be perfectly happy where I am too. Like, and
my guess is he's still getting paid like a main roster guy.
He's got to be. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of a pay cut, but I mean, it's not. You know, with them not doing house shows and stuff and the money being distributed a lot differently than it used to be, my guess is, you know, whatever, he's still making plenty of money and, you know, he's not worried about it. So he just wants to be happy creatively.
You got Michaels getting pounded on in the Hart Foundation corner, kind of cut, as they like to, you know, cutting off the ring.
It's a good veteran tag team.
Hey, you know, if you're going to be a tag team, that's the approach to take at this point. So, Marty looking for the tag, but nope.
So not long after this, obviously, we're going to get the famous Rockers breakup.
Yep, and I'll talk about that. Yep.
Jeff, it just pisses me off so much that we didn't get Sean and Marty at WrestleMania 8. I mean, dude, if Marty had his head screwed on straight, and I should be sensitive because there's probably some, you know,
other things. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you hate saying it. I mean, you know, alcoholism, drugs, whatever it was at the time. But man, if he didn't have those issues, these two would have had one of the most classic kind of undercard feuds of all time.
Yeah.
And who knows what would happen with Marty, but I mean, short term, dude, WrestleMania 8, they would have tore down the house. Probably would have been the opening match. It would have been just absolutely fantastic.
If you ain't last, WrestleMania be first,
Mr. WrestleMania would have had another chapter of a great match. I mean, nobody talks about his match with Tito Santana, but dude, if it was Sean and Marty, kind of the blow off of their feud, oh, it would have been so good. You know,
they really had something there that just, you know, nothing came of it. And so,
yeah. And we thought, I mean, they had it. And at some point I want to cover we got to find out what match was better, but either their Raw match or their Royal Rumble match. They had two really, really good matches. I'd love to cover one of those at some point.
Interesting.
But again,
yeah,
we just never got it. WrestleMania, like right when the feud should have kind of climaxed. Oh God, it would have been so good. So anyways,
you still got him working over Sean or on the outside. Now they're kind of rolling it. Michael's back in and Brett, you know, snapmare. I say the rest hold, just kind of regrouping. Yeah. You talk about the angles. I know I've talked about it. It's been months now since I've talked about it, like just kind of how they film New Japan at this point. And I've always read, you know, how they film at lower angles so that the wrestlers look bigger. Some of those things that, you know, and just their placement and things like that. Even like right now, you've got them like kind of this low camera angle, kind of watching them. It's just how they film. It's how they kind of set it up and things like that. That's why I enjoy why, even though I have the language barrier of the commentary, it doesn't matter for me because, and even this, you know, if you're those watching, you know, with the sound on, you have the Japanese commentary for this one. And so, but that's something that it's still, you know, good wrestling is good wrestling. And this has been a nonstop match. Oh, Michael's with a great sell. Yeah.
And Jeff, it's funny is normally when we watch these matches, we know who won because we either know from watching the match or, you know, in our research, whatever. You probably know who won this. I do not. So I'm like, I'm really looking forward.
I'm not going to lie. Since you're saying this right now, and I'm forgetting who's going to win this one.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm pretty sure I remember, but yeah, this is one where, yeah, I'm not 100%. So there's a hot tag Marty's for Marty.
In, yeah. Yep. Marty's in. And again, man, he was every bit the wrestler of Sean. Oh, super kick.
I didn't there it know is. Super kick. Too. Yep.
Okay.
You won two. Nope.
There was Rockers, and I can't remember. I think it was a Royal Rumble match that they said was an incredible Rockers match too.
Yeah, that was the Orient Express. Yeah,
yeah, yes. I think Bruce and Conrad were just talking about that one, but apparently that was a great match too.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what Meltzer said about that match? He said that was the best match in the WWF since Savage Steamboat.
Hey, that was a 4-star match. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Nope. We talked about this earlier in the show. Yep. And so going for a roll up. Nope. Marty can't get it. And so you got Brett and Marty back in the ring at this point. Weird too. Like Sean worked most of this match to this point, but you got Marty coming in. Ooh. Hot. Oh, whoa. That was a Michaels sell right there. Yikes.
Marty, I guess, went for like a stinger splash, you know, splash in the
crossbody. Yeah.
Brett moves and he just takes a nasty bump outside.
Wow.
I think these guys had to step up their working game too, because, you know, of the crowd in Japan. I mean, it's a big crowd. Obviously you want to do well, but you know, they just expect this stuff.
Dude, look at that tag. Sliding around. Yep. The hot tag. They're going to Michaels. Here you go. Oh, shades of like this early Shawn Michaels. Crazy to see some of that in action. Oh, both guys just plowing into each other.
Dude, Anvil moved better for a big man than I remembered.
Well, and that was one of the things
in his career, especially, you know,
yeah, I remember about him is he was a big dude. And that's why I think I liked him, because I was, you know, I was a big kid. And so,
it's two different types of tag teams, right? Like one type of tag team is when they look the same, Hawk and Animal, Marty and Sean, Demolition, whatever. And then there's another type of tag team, which is, you know, this one where it's like you got the battering ram and then you got the worker.
Well, and we're getting to the close of this match, but and I'll be interested. So and this is in the period too. Like, what was your reaction? Because I feel like it was 15 years where we would talk about wrestlers. Oh, quick roll through Brett. There it is. Yep. Was that it? Yep. There it is. When you hear about the Heart Dungeon, like, do you just have like this Pavlovian response where you're like, oh, like that has to be apps. Like I just pictured like a basement with these guys beating the hell out of each other, which now like we know that's pretty much what it was.
Exactly
was these guys.
What it was.
But like that, you know, like that was why I think the Heart Foundation, you had like that scary, like, oh, like they were trained in the Heart Dungeon, like by Stu Hart. Like you just knew it. Like now you got the Heart Foundation getting the dub here. They're looking up. Yep. Was kind of celebrating in the ring. The Rockers rolling out.
So it was Brett reversed Sean's crossbody for the 1-2-3, kind of a three count out of nowhere. Not much fanfare after the match here. Let's take a quick
look. Normal, but yeah, that's all right. Getting the replay. Yep.
And here's the replay right here that we're going to see. And that's it, man. Just a reversal. Fun match, dude. So
good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. What were your initial thoughts on this one?
That was shockingly better than expected.
Yeah.
Like going, like, you know, hearing about the type, you know, what it was, like where we are and kind of like, I would have thought like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, but that was, I like that. I definitely increased my score from what I was thinking going into it. Like that way, you know, we'll get into it later, but yeah, that was shockingly good.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I mean, super fast paced, great tag match. I mean, it's just, again,
that was a 15-minute match that felt like 5 minutes.
Loved it. I mean, there wasn't a bad spot there. And that's, you know, you rotate guys in and out, you have a great tag match. And I mean, it can be this 15 minutes of action. So loved it, dude. Really, really good. All right. Tell us what happened afterwards. Storyline standpoint. I don't know if you have any reviews or any. Oh, you do? Good. Okay.
Let's get into it, man. Yep.
And then we'll give our payoff score.
So what we got here. Yeah. And so, you know, the SWS, you've got the Super World of Sports after this point. It was really short lived, like just the nature of it and kind of what they were. You actually had the McGain Super, the kind of eyeglass company we had talked about. And sorry, we're saying it wrong, but the eyeglass company kind of, you know, their financial backing kind of pulling out. And so it was really June 19, 1992. It was their final kind of event that they had. And so really, you know, barely 18 months after this first one, not even 15 months, when they kind of started closing things down. And so the talent really went different ways. There was all kinds of different promotions that they went to, and kind of doing their different things. And so, but of course, as Tom kind of alluded to, and we talked about here, it was since really being together since 1985, you know, you had the Hart Foundation, or excuse me, the Rockers splitting up. It was December 1991. This is, again, like what happened exactly. And, you know, this is the wrestling stories of legend. Like, we'll never actually know what happened type thing. But, you know, all kinds of different things, be it contractual, be it, you know, Sean wanted to be a singles guy, the backstage, you know, whatever extracurricular things might have been going on. We all know that eventually, you know, they had a few more matches together and things like that, but culminating though, of course, with the just the Brutus the Barber Beefcake, barbershop segment with Sean super kicking Marty through the plate glass window, which, you know, that's just one of those truly iconic and just incredible moments in wrestling that we'll never forget. And then, you know, the little piece that everybody kind of forgets to ripping up the picture of the two of them to truly signify that they're done, which that's really just a great storytelling little flair that they added to that, of just like, you know, showing him rip up the photo, just really fantastic on that one. And so, with the Hart Foundation, though, you had them, like we said, kind of splitting up. Brett kind of, you know, challenging and winning the Intercontinental title. You got Jim Neidhart was actually taking on Ric Flair and kind of having some matches with him. Interesting how, you know, this played out for him, though. You had Owen, though, coming in, signing with the company, kind of being his backup and being the new foundation, and having that as well too, and them, you know, having their tag teams
against, in their ridiculous outfits.
Yes, they were. Yeah, so
remember those?
Yeah, I'm going against the Nasty Boys, Natural Disaster, which we didn't talk about this one. And so you may have seen this in your notes. So the Natural Disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon. There was actually a shoot kind of moment in this WrestleFest card that we will save for a different day that I just at least want to touch on, of where one of the SWS wrestlers actually being fired after this show because of some shoot wrestling with, Earthquake, and kind of getting into that, but different story for a different day. But you had Brett No, Owen, or excuse me, Jim and Owen kind of doing their own thing, but then also Owen, really, they had one pay-per-view match. It was the 1992 Royal Rumble where they beat the Orient Express. And so, and then eventually, like, these guys, like, that's 1992, but, you know, you have eventually 1994 with Brett and Owen, which that's a topic for another day, that we may or may not have a match between those two individuals somewhere down the road here, but we'll see what I'll just have to see. You know, it's a long road to Mania. You never know what stops we're going to have along the way. So, but just a lot happening. So, all right, thoughts about the aftermath? Are you ready for reviews and scores?
I'm pumped, dude. I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see what you came up with.
So PWI, you had Brett at 21. Jim the Anvil Neidhart was not ranked. Shawn Michaels was 37. Marty was 57. And so, ooh, yeah. And
way
so
higher than I would have thought.
Me too. Yeah. So, but I figure.
I think the moral of the story is people recognize these guys were just fucking workers, even as a tag team. Like, they were just awesome wrestlers.
Well, and that's Shawn is mid 30s, mid upper 30s in 1991. Like, what are you thinking about? And who was number one in 1991? Hulk Hogan. Like, who was number two? Lex Luger, three, Ric Flair, four, Randy Savage, five, Sting. So that's who's above you. Like, you've got huge names, and these were like,
give me that top five again.
You had Hogan, Luger, Flair, Savage, Sting.
And Sting's still wrestling.
Yeah, it's Sting. Yeah, it's right. Ric Flair, I'm sure, is wrestling somewhere. Yep. But here, get this.
That was 30 years ago.
Number six is Scott Steiner, also still wrestling.
Is he still wrestling TNA?
I'm not sure if he's had a match recently, but I know he's been involved in the last year. He's been involved with certain storylines and things like that.
Is he still Big Papa Pump?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course.
Okay.
And so, and I'm just checking to see if there's any other guys on this list that still wrestle. 17, Ted DiBiase, but he's not wrestling. Bret Hart, 21, like I said. Oh, wait, this is a different list than I was looking at. Interesting. Oh, no, I had that right. Yeah, Bret, 21, so that makes sense. Jake Roberts, 23, still involved, of course, having that. Steve Austin, 31, yeah. And so, and then you start getting Sean, 37. So Sean's one of the few that I'd say is still kind of out there and kind of doing it. So just kind of crazy to think of that. But anyways, so I had one little write-up that I saw, and then I have an official Dave Meltzer write-up. So it's a good match.
I forgot this was over in Japan, dude. Meltzer probably gave this fucking 8 stars.
So not quite, but it's high. Yeah. So one of just the smaller write-ups I say is a good match, though with the quiet Japanese crowd and the echo of the cavernous dome setting, it all felt a little bit stifled, and the slightly truncated nature of things is another knock against. Still, a disappointment for these two teams is like a career best for some. And it was nice to see these guys working against one another in a different environment than usual. I if you watch Japanese wrestling, you're not surprised by the crowd. And so it's kind of how it is. And so the Wrestling Observer newsletter, what we've all been waiting for here. So the Hart Foundation beat the Rockers in 1440 when Shawn Michaels came off the top rope with a flying body press onto Bret Hart, who rolled with the move and cradled Michaels for the pin. Very good match, worked by all four. Mainly the Harts got heat on Michaels, even though the Harts didn't work as heels, and the crowd did pop big for Jannetty's hot tag, 3.5 stars. So, which was one of the higher ranked matches on this card. So from the reports given here, the show is not as good as the show 9 days earlier, which was, of course, that WCW show we talked about, but still a good enough show that fans were by and large satisfied. Unlike last year's WWF card at the Tokyo Dome, which was heavily padded from military bases with American fans, basically to ensure crowd reactions to certain spots that wouldn't get over in Japan, there were said to be very few Americans in attendance at this show. The size of the crowd itself really isn't bad when you consider it just came 9 days after an event, and it came after an even larger crowd in the same building, and considering all the wrestling that take place in Tokyo. So 3.5 stars. We got, just some, high rank people here. You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. So, you know, obviously, like, this wasn't like a big pay-per-view match, but I mean, I think there's a build of these two tag teams. I think there's obviously a ton of aftermath between all four of them and all kinds of crazy shit. So I'm going to give this a 7. I think again, there's a lot of interesting stories surrounding this show, the match, the four guys, the before, the after, a really good tag team match. So it's a mishmash of a whole bunch of different things, but I'm going to give it a 7. It's certainly worth carving out 15 minutes to watch the match and take a look at it. What about you?
I'm going to give it an 8. I think that how fast paced this was actually, I say, surprising. And so I'm all right with that. Like, that's a good thing. But I think that it just, like, I almost miss this type of wrestling, like this fast. Like, it was 15 minutes, but it didn't feel like 15 minutes. There was a lot of action. It was good wrestling. It's what I would have kind of expected and things like that. You know, it's just a lot happening for me on this one. And so, I was pleasantly surprised with just how good and fast. And you figure, even this was really like before the prime of these guys. Like, this was before a lot, like, this, you know, shot to the moon for a lot of these guys. Like, you know, of course Brett was always Brett and things like that, but you know, Shawn was a baby in this one. This is the youngest Shawn Michaels we've ever seen in a match at this point. So, and we've watched a lot of Shawn Michaels over the year here, where, you know, almost 2 years doing the show. And so, it's one of those things where I was pleasantly surprised. And as I liked, I was definitely sports entertained.
Do the Rockers ever get in the Hall of Fame?
Oh boy. No, unfortunately, but I it would be nice, you know, who knows. And one day, and we, again, I want to point out, I know it's at the end of the episode, we should have said it at the beginning of the episode, there is always an open invitation, Marty or Sean, of course, too, but Marty, to meet with Tom and talk wrestling.
If I had my choice, I'd take Marty over Sean. You'd have to say at the beginning of the show, if Marty's listening at the beginning, he's still listening now. So Marty, yeah, that's, you're right out there,
just
listening,
like all of our fans. Yeah.
We want you on the show. You are number one on our list. If we can,
Tom will fly guest, to you. Yes.
100%. Yeah.
Yes. And that's not a joke. I want people to understand that is not a joke. We're not being facetious. Tom is ready to meet with Marty wherever he needs to.
And I'll show up with Jack and Coke, because I know you like Jack and Coke, because there you go. I bought you one of the 50 that you had the night before WrestleMania in Dallas. So,
hey, good memories.
All right. So, another great episode. I know what we're covering next week, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we are. Next week, we are officially on the road. On the payoff road to WrestleMania. Yes.
All right. Well, as always, rock on. Thank you for joining us on another episode of The Payoff.